Nemoto Presents Theater for Beginners. Zimi Modikyo, No Theater. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava Voice. Running time, approximately 41 minutes. Theater for Beginners is your honest doorway into the stage where civilizations learn to think out loud. In each episode, one writer and one living question, why does this still hit us in the chest? You'll meet the architects of drama and comedy from Athens to Edo to London, Aeschylus turning grief into law, Sophocles giving conscience a spine, Euripides dragging the sacred into the kitchen, Aristophanes laughing politics back to its senses, Zimi shaping silence, Shakespeare setting language on fire. You leave each episode with more than a plot. You leave with a tool. How to argue without cheating, how to spot a pretty lie, how to stand your ground without becoming stone. If you've ever felt theater was for other people, this is for you. One clear voice, rich storytelling, scenes you can see in your mind, and the quiet conviction that old plays are not homework, they're field guides for today. He walks onto the stage by not walking at all, but by allowing the stage to arrive under him, step after sliding step, the soles barely leaving the wooden floor, as if movement itself were a courtesy offered to silence. This is Zimi's theater before you know his name, a square of polished cypress with a painted pine at the back, a bridge that is more than a corridor, drums whose breath is leather and rope, a flute whose high notes seem to call the past into the present like a crane calling the dawn. Long before the story declares itself, the space declares its terms. Everything here will be precise. Everything will be slow enough to be understood and fast enough to be alive, and the most important actions may be almost invisible unless you have trained your eyes to see. Zimi is the person who teaches you how to see. He is remembered as Zimi Modikyo, son of Kanami, heir and refiner of an art that already had ritual bones and popular muscle. He is actor and playwright and theorist, the rare maker who turns a craft into sentences without draining it of blood. He grows up in the field, not in the library, and then he writes the library a field can use. A shogun's favor lifts him, and the next shogun's suspicion exiles him, which is to say he learns early that applause is not a residence. That lesson is part of the work. Know in his hands is not the vanity of a beautiful hour. It is a discipline for surviving the weather. At the center of his vocabulary is a simple metaphor that refuses to remain simple. He calls it the flower. A flower in the mind is not a blossom in a vase. It is the felt experience of freshness, the sensation that what appears before you could not have appeared otherwise and yet feels new. Youth often owns it by default. A child on stage delights because time itself claps for children. Zimi is kind to that early magic and stern with it too. He calls it a temporary flower. It withers without skill. What he wants actors to cultivate is the true flower, a radiance that comes from measure, from the rightness of gesture and voice, from a confidence so quiet the audience leans toward it without quite knowing why. In the end, there is even an old age flower, an ember light that glows after the fireworks have gone. He does not despise the fireworks. He simply prefers the ember, because the ember knows what it is doing. Then there is Yugen, the taste he wants to leave on the tongue when the play is over. People translate the word as mystery or shaded beauty, but translation is a coat that covers too much. Yugen is the feeling of a shoreline at night when the eye asks where the water ends and the sky begins, and the question is better than the answer. It is the moment when a familiar melody turns a corner you didn't expect, and somehow the corner feels inevitable. It is the dignity of withholding, of doing just enough and no more, so that the audience's own memory finishes the carving. If the flower is the pleasure of fresh arrival, then Yugen is the depth that keeps arrival from evaporating. He gives you a clock, too, so the body can keep time with the meanings. Jo Ha Kyu is the name. Begin with restraint. Let the form find its break. Close with quick necessity. A performance is a living arc. It contains breath. The opening is not a stalled engine, but a low flame that gives the eye time to adjust. The middle is not chaos. It is the place where strength bends a little and lets light in. The end is not haste. It is the right speed of inevitability. Jo-ha-kyu is not only the contour of a single scene, it governs a whole evening and the small motions within a single step. It is a way of refusing both boredom and panic. He rescues imitation from the insult of mere copying. He calls the right imitation monomane, not the theft of surfaces, but the entry into principle. Do not produce madness by flailing. Ask what pressure would twist a mind into a circle, and then show the weight of that pressure in the careful drift of a foot. Do not paint grief on your face like mascara. Find the sentence the soul cannot stop saying to itself and let the face become the consequence of thinking it too many times. Monomane is not pretending. It is fidelity. The mask helps. The training helps. The audience finishes the job. Look at the stage and you see his intelligence made wood. There is a roof over the platform, not because the builders fear rain, but because the theater acts like an outdoor shrine even when it is indoors. There is a pine painted on the rear wall, evergreen witness to human impermanence, a green that looks different under each season's light. For pillars mark the corners like a compass, so a masked actor never loses north. A bridge corridor, the Hashigakari, is not backstage. It is a landscape of time. The principal figure, called the Shite, crosses that bridge from a mirror room where the mask waits, and the crossing is already story. Arrival from elsewhere, a passage from hidden to seen. By the time the Shite steps onto the main boards, the audience has been prepared to watch rather than to consume. He is ruthless about training and merciful about performance. The ruthlessness belongs to rehearsal because rehearsal is where you build the instincts that will save you when the night has its own ideas. Kata, the forms, the patterns, the codified shapes of gesture and voice, are not cages. They are the scaffolds that let a body climb without fear. You repeat them until the mind that worries about being seen stops bothering you, and the bones remember where the meaning lives. Then you forget them properly, which is to say you let them govern you without policing you. He speaks of levels of attainment, the first shine of youth, the disciplined blossom of maturity, the deep quiet of age. He writes as if one could choose to become luminous simply by obeying the right constraints long enough to fall in love with them. He will not let theory drift too far from breath. He returns again and again to the particular audience, the hall's smell, the season's temperature. The same line is not the same line if the room is hot. The same gesture is not the same gesture if the audience is grieving. He asks actors to adjust while guarding the core. He asks directors, though he would not use that modern word, to balance programs as if an entire day were one organism with a pulse. Which is why he arranges the repertory, like weather. A god play lifts the sky early. A warrior play ties courage to loss. A woman's play makes longing articulate and pure. A miscellaneous play explores disturbance with compassion. And a demon play releases the pressure that a whole day of memory can build. This is not superstition, it is public health. A city that spends hours inside stories deserves to go home with its balance restored. Roles in No are not social slots, they are functions of consciousness. The Shite is not a star in the modern sense, but a knot where memory condenses. The Waki, often a monk or traveler, offers ordinariness, the anchor that permits a haunting to dock. The chorus is not comment but bloodstream. It takes the line when the body must move. It gives the line back when the body must be still. The musicians do not accompany, they co-author. The flute writes a horizon in the air. The shoulder drum breathes like an animal. The hip drum answers like a friend whose advice doesn't need words. The great drum, when it appears, speaks only when necessary and with the force of weather. A night with all of them tuned to Jo-ha-kyu feels less like entertainment than like intelligent ritual. Masks are teachers in cedar. They do not fix emotion. They make it visible as relation. Tilt a fraction upward, and a face that seemed sorrowful becomes luminous. Tilt downward, and it clouds over with grief. The carver has already done so much work that a quarter inch becomes fate. The actor's job is not to slap feeling onto wood, but to adjust the angle of the world. This is the kind of metaphysics a person can use outside the theater. So often what we call emotion is an angle problem, how we are holding the situation against the light. Zimi's art trains angles until feeling becomes intelligible instead of loud. He tells stories as if memory were the true protagonist. In many of his most loved pieces, what happens is that a traveler meets a figure near a temple or a shore, speaks with them, and slowly, beneath the poetry of everyday detail, discovers that the figure is not entirely in the present tense. The second half of the play arrives like a dream that has learned to sing. A name from history, a youth cut down in battle, a woman waiting beside salt pans, a courtier in exile, awakens and narrates itself through dance. The effect is not ghost story, but ethical weather report. Regret has a temperature. Longing has a breeze. Consolation has a light that is neither noon nor night. By the end, the world has not changed, but your hearing has. He cares for the interval as much as for the action. The Japanese word is ma, a small name for the charged pause that lets meaning settle. A beginner mistakes slowness for meaning. Zimi's slowness is correctness of speed. He is not trying to make time heavy. He is calibrating time so that speech can land with dignity. When a singer holds a vowel beyond what prose would tolerate, the extension is not indulgence. It is an opening for attention to become a collaborator. When the foot glides with exaggerated care, it is not a trick to look exotic. It is mercy for the mind, which cannot digest what it is not given time to chew. There is a modesty in his method that the modern ear may miss. He is not interested in proving how much he knows. He is interested in making sure that what the art knows can survive another century of weather. He writes about costume weight and voice color, about when to let the chorus take a sentence, and how to use the bridge, as if it were a road between this world and another. He is always turning philosophy into craft and craft back into philosophy. The highest compliment he gives a performance is that it felt inevitable without being predictable. That, too, is a practice a person can carry out of the theater into the street. Zen haunts the margins not as doctrine but as hygiene. Emptiness here is not vacancy, but the clearing that lets a pine cast a clean shadow. Mindfulness is not decor. It is the only way to keep Jōhaku from hardening into a party trick. The presence of monks in so many stories is not propaganda. It is a recognition that witness can heal. The traveler who listens well gives the past away to finish speaking. And the plays often end not with triumph, but with a right disappearance, the figure returning to what it is, wind, surf, echo, once the necessary speech has been made. He is tender toward age in a way our culture needs and rarely receives. Youth he honors, its speed, its brightness, its easy flower. But the flower he loves most is the one that survives winter. He calls it the old age flower and talks about it without nostalgia, as if the art itself breathed easier when it could stop dazzling and begin to glow. He imagines an actor whose knees do not leap as high and whose hands do not tremble because they have nothing to prove. He imagines an audience capable of seeing more with less stimulus. It is dignifying to be taught to want that. He is unsentimental about loss. Rulers change, tastes pivot, masks crack, students leave. He does not complain. He returns to work and refines instructions. He writes as if the right repetition keeps a door open through which the art can survive regimes. A mask carved correctly will do its job under candles or under electric light. A kata learned properly will not fail because the hall is smaller than you hoped. A chorus trained to breathe together can carry a knight whose star is coughing. The point is not perfection. The point is reliability married to depth. He keeps offering usable sentences. Imitate principles, not surfaces. Do not force Yugen. Prepare for it. Begin quietly. Let the form find its fault line. Then close with necessity. Let the bridge be a bridge. Do not turn it into a stage before its time. Teach the body to do what the mind means. Let the audience meet you halfway. Offer the flower you can offer at the age you are. Trust that the true flower belongs to those who tend it rather than to those who demand it. The more you read him, the more you recognize that these maxims are not rules but invitations to a life that could be calmer without being dull. And always, always there is breath. Breath in the syllable. Breath in the step. Breath in the drum skin. Breath in the tiny hush before a hand turns left instead of right. If you want to know what his theater is for, watch how people walk out of it. They do not swagger. They do not swoon. They seem to stand a fraction taller and to carry their arms with a little more care, as if reminded that a limb is not an object but a sentence still being written. The pine at the back, a painting that becomes a companion, seems to travel with them into streets that usually do not deserve such good company. Imagine the mirror room, the Kagami no Ma, where the mask waits. The actor looks at his own face, then at the cedar face, and lets the difference become a door. He lifts the mask and the room becomes more real, not less, because the private self has been asked to step aside for a while. Breath adjusts. The spine refines its promise. He steps onto the bridge, and time shifts. What crosses that strip of wood is not a person pretending to be someone else. It is a pattern of memory asking the audience to help it finish speaking. The exchange is dignified. It is also practical. People long to be treated as collaborators in their own enchantment. You do not need a theater to practice what he teaches. A kitchen floor is cypress if you let it be. A hallway is a bridge if you remember that crossing a threshold changes time. A conversation can be jōhaku and will be gentler if it is. A day can have a chorus, which is to say a habit that catches your breath when you are running too fast. A life can have yugen if it chooses restraint where display would be easier. None of this is pious. All of it is merciful. If you want to test whether his lesson has landed, step outside after thinking of him and listen to traffic. If it sounds a little like drumming and a little like chant, if the crosswalk light feels like an opening and the sudden hush of a red lamp feels like a necessary close, if wind against your sleeve makes you aware of how your arm occupies air, then Zimi has worked on you from a distance. He did not write to make you adore antiquity. He wrote to make you precise. He designed an art that could teach a city to move with courtesy, and courtesy here is not etiquette. It is the right use of attention in public. He knew favor, and he knew exile. He knew applause, and he knew the silence that follows when a politics changes its mind about you. He does not teach bitterness. He teaches the kind of resilience that does not need a mood to function. Ritual that is merely repetition becomes museum dust. Ritual that is trained attention becomes medicine. He takes the human appetite for display and domesticates it, not to make it small but to make it honest. People will always love a show. He asks the show to love them back. Think again of the sliding step, the foot that barely leaves the floor, the way a sleeve inflates and subsides with a turn, the way a mask becomes three faces with a tilt of the neck. None of this is spectacular in the way we have been taught to crave. All of it is spectacular in the way a right sentence is, the way a well-made tool is, the way a door that closes quietly after a quarrel is. He fought for that kind of spectacle. He gave it names and shapes and sequences that endure because they solve problems most entertainment refuses to admit exist. How do you slow a room without losing it? How do you ask for attention without stealing it? How do you tell a story that ends without insisting that everything be fixed? His answers are performances. They can be borrowed. A day arranged under his eye would begin with a clear task done without hurry, break its stride at noon so the mind could breathe, and close with something swift and necessary so that sleep would find a body that felt finished. A conversation arranged under his eye would start with kindness, venture into difficulty when the joint had warmed, and end before either party had to pretend that exhaustion was in sight. A life arranged under his eye would respect seasons. There is a flower for each, and the worst sin is to force the wrong one to bloom. What remains is the pine. It waits at the back like a witness that does not gossip. It is painted, and it is true. The same can be said of most of what he makes. Costumes as heavy as oaths. Music that is closer to weather than to tune. Steps that read like calligraphy if you learn the alphabet of the ankle. Words that will not die because they do not announce themselves as literature. They announce themselves as help. He tells you to prepare the room and then to trust that what should arrive will arrive. The trust is not mystical. It is earned by craft. He keeps the craft honest with sentences you can memorize on a walk. Begin softly. Break wisely. Finish with necessity. Offer the flower you have, not the flower you wish you had. Protect the interval. Invite the depth. Let the mask teach you how to hold your face in public. The last thing you hear if you listen is the breath behind the drum. It is human and it is disciplined, and the mix is the point. Zimi did not build a shrine to performance. He built a school for attention. If it sends you back into your day kinder to time and stricter with display, the lesson has taken. You will not always succeed. He did not always succeed, but he left a stage that still teaches and a vocabulary that still fits. Take what you need, a way to shape an hour, a way to move through a room, a way to honor the past without becoming its echo. The pine is waiting. The bridge is not long. The flower will appear if you prepare the ground. He does not forget the neighbor art that keeps the house ventilated. Comedy in the form of Kaijin walks into the same space with the same craftsman and reminds the nerves that reverence, without oxygen, becomes brittle. A day of god visitations and warrior hauntings needs a pressure valve. Laughter, correctly placed, is hygiene for the soul. A porter who mistakes a treasure for junk, a servant who outsmarts a petty lord, a drunk who promises sobriety tomorrow and repeats the promise tomorrow. These are not sabotage, but counterpoint. The lesson is structural. Intensity lasts longer alongside relief, and relief deserves craft as careful as grief. Zimi's texts speak little about comic scripts, but the system he builds assumes them, the way a well-designed roof assumes rain without naming it. A city that breathes properly can endure a full program and leave better balanced than it arrived. Craft gathers in the smallest instruments. The fan is not decor, it is grammar condensed into wood and paper. Closed, it declares. Half open, it asks. Fully open, it becomes weather, breeze, rain, moon, a letter read aloud, a blade about to be sheathed, a cup raised and declined. The sleeve is a second line for the hand, extending thought past the wrist, so that a feeling can be seen across the room without being shouted. Even the way a foot meets the board is a sentence. Suriyashi, the sliding step, keeps the center of gravity low and the meaning high. It writes time as continuity instead of as impact. When the chorus takes a phrase and the body must move unsupervised by the mouth, the training either shines or falls apart. He will not let it fall apart if he can help it, so he makes repetition a mercy rather than a punishment. Kata, the forms, must enter the bones so that on a night when memory feels like a bad friend, the bones can keep their promise. Audience is not an abstraction for him. He does not flatter the loudest appetite in the room. He teaches the performer to play to the best listener the room can contain. When beginners fill the seats, brighten the petals of the flower without tearing out the stem. Trust that dignity educates quickly. When connoisseurs assemble in a mood to applaud refinements, resist embroidery that smothers freshness. Protect surprise from expertise. Please the eyes in front of you. Serve the form behind you. Inside that balance sits the ethics of a public art. He knows how easily a living tradition becomes a museum or a carnival. The cure for both is attention to the human beings breathing tonight and fidelity to the measure that outlives tonight. Roles are not status in his taxonomy. They are functions of consciousness. The shite bears revelation, the knot where memory condenses into form. The waki studies the world, the stranger whose ordinariness lets the extraordinary dock. The tsur, companions, thicken relationship, make longing audible by giving it an ear on stage. The AI Kaijin speaks in the middle with everyday speech to ventilate the room. Children appear as kokata when a bell is needed that no adult instrument can ring. Each role has its flower and each flower its season. The radiance of a young actor belongs to characters that require sweetness without weight. The quiet burn of a mature actor fits characters whose every glance carries history. He writes not to freeze casting, but to keep dignity aligned with capacity. Masks deserve a slow look because they are the thought carved into cedar that lets one human face become many. The young woman's Kaol mote holds a light like winter moonrise. A degree of tilt brings shyness, another degree sorrow, another grace. Hanya, horn by jealousy, can register human pain from one angle and punish without remainder from another. The line between wound and weapon lies in the neck. Shikami, all teeth and strain, makes rage legible without spit. Okina, more right than character, turns a stage into a blessing when the year asks for it. Zimi trusts the carver and then trusts the performer to do the final carving with breath. The performance is not a mask wearing a man. It is a tension wearing a principle that both includes and exceeds a man. Architecture is doctrine in wood. The four posts are not anonymous supports. They have names that orient a soul. The Shite Bashira, where revelation plants its feet. The Waki Bashira, where steadiness waits. The Fue Bashira, where the flute writes the horizon in air. The Metsuke Bashira, where the eyes are trained to fix and thus to free the rest of the body to move. Three small pines along the bridge, Hashigakari, mark distance the way milestones mark a pilgrimage. The painted pine at the back bears witness to seasons, looking different in summer glare and winter hush, although no painter's hand has touched it since it dried. With so little, the room says so much. Here is north, here is elsewhere, here is arrival, here is return. A modern designer ought to envy the economy. Voice is the instrument that cannot be carved by a second person and therefore receives the most exacting requests. The chant, otai, is neither speech nor song as the West divides them. It is a line carried along the spine like a bow along a string. He wants color without syrup, diction without fuss, volume that belongs to meaning rather than to ego. He treats breath like ink. One inhalation should be enough to write the stroke the line requires. Cues and kusumai, the sections where song and dance embrace most tightly, are crucibles in which either years of discipline glow like coals or the absence of discipline reveals itself without mercy. A vowel held too long becomes vanity. A vowel held just long enough becomes yugen, that shaded beauty that arrives when form has been so obeyed that something larger than form can use it. He is practical about authorship in a way that protects the living. Pages survive by luck and labor, plays accrete, variants breed. Fidelity lives in effect, not in fetish. If a line has gone stale in the ear of a city, substitute a line that restores the intended pressure. If a gesture no longer signifies because the audience has lost that alphabet, change the letter so the word can be read. This is not vandalism. It is conservation at the right scale. He expects the art to outlast any given policy and therefore writes policy with room to breathe. A full program under his eye shapes a day like weather that knows how to heal. The god play opens a ceiling and lets the large air in. The warrior play grieves battle without flattering it. The woman's play refines longing until it shines without smoke. The miscellaneous play explores disturbance, madness, piety, or comic relief. The final demon play releases pressure with necessary speed and color so that the night can close without residue. Between these, Kaijin interludes are windows. A person who enters before noon and leaves at dusk has had a gradual education in balance. This is not superstition. It is civic medicine administered through beauty. Watch him instruct the talented young, and you see both tenderness and rigor. A student, buoyed by favor, trusts youth's automatic flower and begins to imitate his own echo. Zimi's counsel is surgical and kind, while freshness is cheap. Invest in depth. While knees are honest, train stillness. While applause arrives easily, practice denial so that you can survive audience hunger without feeding it junk. Restraint learned in fairness will save you when fairness ebbs. Brightness without measure stales quickly. Measure without brightness never stales. Audiences receive instruction too, though he would never scold a paying stranger. No is not a democracy of interruption. There are pauses the city lends its silence to, like citizens lending a hand to raise a beam. There is laughter that helps and laughter that breaks. Do not clap reflexively at every flourish. Do not cough into a sacred beat. Do not place yourself between the mask and the pine. Such etiquette is not snobbery. It is the gardening of attention, rules that protect seedlings so that spring can happen more than once. He assumes a public capable of reverence and rewards that assumption with performances that honor their patience. Eugen needs examples to remain a tool rather than a slogan. Think of a shoreline at dusk where the line between water and sky refuses to fix itself and your eye feels grateful for the refusal. Think of a poem that ends three beats early and sends you home humming what it did not say. Think of a costume sleeve that continues a thought further than prose would tolerate, and somehow you understand the thought better for the excess. Eugen is not fog that hides bad architecture. It is the light that appears when architecture has been constructed so exactly that it can afford to suggest instead of insist. It cannot be forced, and it cannot be faked. It arrives when the ground has been prepared, and often when the performers have stopped trying to be admired. He keeps politics near the floor and turns them into attention rather than into slogans, because he knows the price of patronage and the cost of being visible to power. A patron's favor lifts and exposes. A patron's successor may not inherit the taste. A theater dependent on machinery dies when budgets shift. A theater that needs wood, rope, cloth, breath, and memory survives worse winters. He accepts favor when it comes and refuses to let favor redesign measure. Fortune is a reckless sponsor. Form is faithful. The system is built to endure both jealousy and neglect without changing its temperature. All of this translates beyond a Cypress stage. If your studio is a laptop and your stage a timeline, the sliding step becomes the smooth cut. The mask becomes the interface that asks for minimal motion and returns maximal clarity. Eugen becomes the dignity of negative space in a frame crowded by features. Jo-Hawk Yu becomes the rhythm of an episode that opens with quiet confidence, breaks into discovery, and closes with swift necessity. He would ask for restraint where algorithms reward noise, and would expect that success purchased by noise will not buy a second season of attention. The flower you can sustain is better than the fireworks you can only afford once. Failure, for him, is mostly a posture problem. The audience reads spinal honesty faster than it reads declared feeling. A body that says panic will ruin a scene no matter what the face declares. A body that says listening will save a scene even when the mouth has to travel a long road. Training therefore fixes ankles before it tries to fix tears. He would smile at classes that begin with catharsis and end with exhaustion. He would design classes that begin with balance and end with breath, because a balanced instrument can carry feeling without spilling it. The ensemble proves that precision can be companionable. The drummer's keiko, the shouted syllables that are not words, are not secret codes. They are trust pronounced aloud. A yo here, a ha there, and the quartet of musicians and chorus shares a single nervous system. In the score, there are beats you do not hear but cannot miss. The nori carries words like a current carries a leaf. Timing becomes a form of friendship. Zimi engineers rehearsal so that friendship survives strain. Narrative, in his house, tends to reconcile rather than to conquer. The warrior's Shay does not return to kill an enemy. He returns to ask for remembrance that loosens a knot in time. A woman wronged does not light a revenge that burns the room. She dances a recognition that clears the air the way weather clears. Even demons are often energies that quiet once they are seen in their proper frame. This is not sentimentality. It is a metaphysic that believes attention, properly given, changes the world's pressure. Season sits everywhere in his advice. Spring asks for the flower of beginnings, autumn for the flower of harvest. Youth permits certain speeds and forbids certain weights. Age permits other speeds and carries other weights with grace. Certain plays smell right when plum blossoms are outside. Others fit winter when clarity feels like mercy. He is not forcing nature into art. He is borrowing nature's calendar so that art can feel like home. The mirror room remains the emblem for his whole practice. A human face looks at a carved face, and a third thing is born that is neither vanity nor disappearance. The human is not the point. The mask is not the point. What they do together and pass to the audience is the point. A city that learns that lesson by repetition over decades becomes less cruel and less hysterical without anyone needing to publish a manifesto. Some critics call No Subtraction. He calls a completion at the right scale. A basin does not fail because it is not a lake. A whisper does not fail because it is not a shout. The scale of no matches breath and conscience. Inflate it and you lose working pressure. Shrink it and you lose reach. Right size is part of right ethics. He keeps the beginner in view. A child on a bench, not yet fluent in patience, caught by a sleeve moving like water, is already inside the craft's care. That child will return. The connoisseur with decades of pine in the eye must also be fed. He insists on both welcomes. Hand the newcomer a flower he can smell. Hand the elder a flower she has not yet finished naming. The repertoire survives because it refuses to choose between courtesy and depth. Vanity is acknowledged without being enthroned. If you must display, display control. If you must be admired for how the play breathes when you occupy it. If the mask begins to feel like a mirror, set it down and return to the floor. Glide as if the boards remembered you before you began to remember yourself, because on a good night they do. A paradox he offers to modern haste is simple. To move an audience quickly, slow yourself. The right economy accelerates comprehension, not the right noise. A turned head becomes a paragraph if earned. Three steps on the bridge become a chapter if breath, drum, and text share a decision. People are faster than we pretend and more delicate than we remember. He wagers on both, and the wager pays most nights. So take the parts of his method that a working life can hold. Take the timetable, Joe Hockyu for the hour, for the day, for the year. Take the ethics. Imitate principles, not surfaces. Prepare the ground for Yugen rather than demanding it like a spoiled guest. Take the devices, mask angles, fan grammar, sleeve syntax, sliding step. Take the politics, serve the form before you serve a moment's approval. Take the consolation that the old age flower exists and that a public exists that can see it. Then build your bridge. If all this sounds austere, weigh it against the feelings it can carry. A fan allowed to fall at the correct interval can break a heart without a cry. A chorus that takes a line at the right moment can rescue an actor and a scene from strain. A single drum shout can synchronize the lungs of 100 strangers. None of these achievements appears impressive when listed. They appear miraculous when lived for a breath. Zimi builds a small civilization out of seconds and trusts time to protect it. After a day under his architecture, posture changes. You sit differently at a desk, sign your name with less theater and more presence, answer a door as if it were a bridge worth crossing rather than a threshold to rush past. You hear where the Joe in your email was too long, where the ha entered before the relationship was warm, where the cue slammed instead of completed. That hearing is not preciousness. It is competence applied to time. Ordinary life turns out to be the stage he was building you for from the start. He did not set out to be a saint of subtlety. He set out to be useful. He succeeded. He left us a way to turn attention into a public art that protects a city from vulgarity and exhaustion. Whether your boards are cypress, concrete, or pixels, his sentences transfer without loss if you obey their scale. Begin with quiet. Break where truth requires it. Close with necessity. Offer the flower you can offer. Trust that depth will be seen. Let the mask teach you how to hold a face in public. Let the chorus teach you when to give the line away. Let the pine teach you constancy that does not preen. And if you live long enough, the old age flower will arrive without being begged. It comes like dusk, inevitable and full of what the day has earned. You will step onto whatever passes for a bridge and feel the boards accept you. Someone in the room who does not yet know your name will breathe in your rhythm for a moment, and the city will be less alone. The fan will close with forgiveness in it. The drum will soften, then keep time one last time. The pine will darken by a shade and remain. You will leave knowing that the best thing you made was not applause, but a pattern other people can inhabit when weather demands courage.